It's over.
Game over.
Game over, man.
It's over.
It's time for the Chicago Blackhawks postgame show.
Give me the postgame.
On the Blackhawks Radio Network, here's Charlie Remeliotis.
Welcome into the Blackhawks postgame show. Charlie Remeliotis here, breaking down a 4-1 Blackhawks loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs at Scotiabank Arena. You can call or text 312-981-7200. Let's go back to Scotiabank Arena and bring in the great Troy Murray to help us break this one down. Troy, I mean, honestly, probably one of the better all-around efforts of the season for the Blackhawks, limiting Toronto to just 37 shot attempts in the entire game. Where did you feel like it went wrong for Chicago tonight?
Stole ours. I mean, that's where the problem started. He couldn't solve them. Massive goaltender, 6'6", 240 plus pounds. He was excellent. And the Hawks, boy, I agree with you, Charlie. I thought that from start to finish, they worked hard. Their energy was there. They skated well. They spent more time in the offensive zone, I think, than probably any other game. I know that the Blackhawks coaching staff and analytics will break down this game, and I'd really be interested to see how much time they spent in the offensive zone compared to their average on the season. But it was way up there, if not the best, one of the top two. They just dominated this game. But Toronto, they were up 2-0, and the Blackhawks were chasing the game, and unfortunately there was a little bit of a breakdown on the first goal by Matthews in the first period. One of the best goal scorers in the NHL goes in all alone and beats Soderblom to the five hole. It happens. A real lucky goal for Tavares in the second period. That's a really bad break. And then you look at the goal by Reichel. That's just a hard-working shift by that fourth line. Again, just doing all the little things the right way. Craig Smith, Maroon, they all had solid games. And then 21 seconds later, it's a dagger. And they didn't seem deterred by it. They just battled back, and they kept going at the Maple Leafs. But you got to know that that's one of the things that, they're trying to clean up that. They're trying to build on, those moments when you gain momentum in a game. And it was one of the keys. It was the first key that I talked about, the key moments in the game. Well, that was the key moment in the game where the Blackhawks got back into it. Anything can happen with a one-goal lead or a one-goal deficit if you're talking about the Blackhawks, and then that goal 21 seconds later, that's a killer.
Yeah, I was just about to say, that second period for the Blackhawks was probably one of their best periods of the entire season, and they were able to capitalize on that momentum on that fourth-line shift that Lucas Reichel scored on, and then 21 seconds later, I mean, you said it on the broadcast, it's now three games in a row where the Blackhawks have kind of given up a quick strike after a goal and kind of halts any sort of momentum that Chicago can build.
Yeah, and whether it's the goal in Minnesota that was 17 seconds after the Blackhawks had scored their goal, and then scored their first goal of the game on a turnover, a mental mistake. But 17 seconds later, now they're, instead of being up 1-0, they're down 2-1. And, then they kind of just struggled to find their rhythm again. And this one, they kept their rhythm the whole time. But, that one quick goal, that response from Toronto is something that the Blackhawks really got to figure out. And again, that line going out there on the next shift has to have a focus, has to have a purpose. And you got to give credit to Toronto. I gave credit to Columbus and how they responded on the three power play goals for the Blackhawks yesterday afternoon, and what the Wild did. Give them credit for how they battled back. And it was a real smart play by the defenseman to bank it off the boards. And then it took a little bit of a carom off the side of the net, and Wyatt Kaiser turned one way, looked at it the other way, and it came out behind him. Not much he can do on that play, but it's an old play that a St. Louis defenseman used to do all the time, a guy named Rob Ramage. I mean, he would sit there in the morning skate, and he would bank pucks off the boards. He would figure out where the sweet spot was, and it was part of his game plan because, you take away the shooting lanes, but the side of the net is open, and if you can make those plays where it bounces out in front, it's really tough because the defensemen, they're facing the shot. Now all of a sudden they got to turn around and try and find where this carom is coming off the backboards. And unfortunately, Kaiser couldn't find it. And the Toronto Maple Leaf player was right there to slam one in past Soderblom. But that has been a major sore spot for the Blackhawks here in the last three games, and a big reason why they haven't got points out of these games.
The Blackhawks scored 3 power play goals yesterday against Columbus. They also had 5 power play goals in their last 3 games. I think they had 4 opportunities in this game today and went 0-for-4. I mean, that's also going to be, I think particularly in that second period when Toronto was up 1-0, Hawks had consecutive power plays, including a 5-on-3 for 28 seconds. Just feels like a missed opportunity not to cash in there.
Yeah, I didn't like the 5-on-3, the way that they got one chance, but I don't even know if it was a shot on goal. But I just thought they were a little bit too stagnant in their positioning, and then got a little bit confused at one point where two guys were basically in the same spot standing next to one another. Just can't have that happen. And for the Blackhawks power play that looked so good in that game yesterday afternoon against Columbus, didn't look good in this game. Give credit to Toronto's penalty killers, though. I mean, you know, you got to tip your hat to the other side of the equation there. You know, we can say that the power play was not good. Toronto is going to talk about how their penalty killing was excellent. So, you know, there's a give and take as far as what side of the equation you're looking at this at. But they needed to get some results on their power play. Could have been a big difference in the game. They just didn't get it done.
Man, it's such a difficult loss for the Blackhawks, because I feel like if they replay this game, you know, 10 times, like, they'll probably win 7 of them. You know, you really held Austin Matthews' line in check outside of that goal on the first goal on the breakdown. But it didn't feel like his line generated a ton of chances, that the Hawks really limited their top guys. It's kind of just shooting yourself in the foot is how the Blackhawks lost this hockey game. And of course, Anthony Stolarz kind of took it away from them.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, there was one time in the third period, and it was probably midway to later in the third period, was the first time that John had mentioned Matthews in a play, in a sequence. He just was not a big factor in this game, except he did have 3 shots on goal. He was +2. I think he was out on the ice for the empty netter. And he won 7 of his 9 faceoffs. The Blackhawks, again, 37% in faceoffs. And that's a sore spot that is just going to, you know, it's going to resonate with me a lot, because as a former centerman, I took so much pride in making sure that, you know, we won our fair share of draws, and Hawks need to find a way to get that puck possession rate off to the bat. 37% is just not going to cut it, and the second or third worst team in the NHL in faceoff percentages overall. So that's got to put themselves in a different situation if they can start winning some draws. But I thought the Blackhawks really did a nice job of quieting a guy like Austin Matthews in this game. I thought Marner was good, and Nylander, when he had the puck, he was dangerous as well. But I thought the Blackhawks played really hard against all their top players. And again, unfortunately, as you said, you may play this game exactly. Toronto probably wasn't very good in this game, and that's probably what Craig Berube is going to say. Hey, we weren't good. We got goaltending, and that stole the game for us. But if you play this game over without the goaltending of Stolarz, you're going to win this game.
This was the first game of the season where Connor Bedard and Tyler Bertuzzi were on a line together. We know they spent most of training camp on a line together, and right before the opening night against Utah, Hawks kind of went away from that. What did you see from that duo? I think Connor and Bertuzzi both did not have a shot on goal in this game.
Yeah, I wasn't really impressed with the way that they played, and I thought Connor maybe a little bit too much on the outside, but I think Toronto defended against him. He's obviously a focus when you're coming into the game. Hey, let's take away Bedard. Let's take away the time and space quickly when he gets in the offensive zone. Let's not let him get that shot away. Let's be in front of him. And I thought for the large part of the game, they did a nice job. And Bedard had 3 shots that were blocked, which says a lot, because you know you're putting yourself in between him and the goaltender, and you got to sacrifice yourself. And I just, you know, Bertuzzi, I thought he worked hard, but he's got to find a way to generate some more shots. I think he only had 3 shots in the previous 9 games coming into this one, and that is just not going to cut it. What they wanted to try and establish with this line combination with Taylor Hall and Bedard along with Bertuzzi was getting Bertuzzi to the front of the net and creating that second and third opportunity. He was there a lot. He worked hard along the boards, but really didn't create the chances that I think the Hawks were looking for on that first line.
All right, good stuff, Troy. I'll send you off now. Get back home to Chicago, because we got another game on Wednesday at the UC.
Yeah, and that's going to be a fun one. It's a 6:30 start at the United Center, and it's going to be the big, bad Boston Bruins coming to town.
We've had a really good stretch here of some afternoon games, some early starts. We had 6:30. It was today, Central Time. get another early start on Wednesday. I'll take this trade off after the first month and a half where we had all those 9:30 games.
Why do you have a life outside of hockey?
Well, I just like my sleep schedule to be on track. I'm sure you do too with those late flights.
Oh, those were I could certainly do without those late nights, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, getting into the hotels, the time change coming back. It's tough travel, but every team goes through it. It's part of professional sports.
All right. We'll be able to get a pregame nap in on Wednesday. Who's laughing? Is that John in the background?
That's our engineer laughing.
All right. All right. Get out of here. You got a flight to catch.
All
I'll
right.
see you Wednesday.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right. Good stuff, Troy. That is the great Troy Murray. Yeah, just looking at the raw numbers here by the Blackhawks, they shot attempts were 60-37 in favor of Chicago. Shots on goal were 28-22 in favor of Chicago. And by the way, that was just the sixth time all season the Blackhawks outshot their opponent. In those six games, they're 1-5-0. So they have just one win to show for it in the six games the Blackhawks have outshot an opponent, which is a little bizarre because the record by the Blackhawks when they are outshot is 6-9-2. So I don't know if that's the recipe you want to follow if you're Chicago, but it is weird. And it doesn't feel like the Hawks have too many goalie wins this year, where it feels like a lot of the wins last year, it was Mrazek totally standing on his head. Whereas this year, it feels like the Hawks have been able to tighten things up defensively. So it is weird that on the games the Blackhawks do outshoot their opponents, they're not having that success. And then looking at the scoring chances, 33-21 and high quality scoring chances, 15-12. That second period specifically, the shot attempts were 33-7 in favor of Chicago. Scoring chances were 22-4 in favor of the Blackhawks in the second period. And unfortunately, they left that second period down 2-0. They didn't have anything to show for it. And then the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm looking, they had 25 of their shot attempts came at 5-on-5. They had just 7 shot attempts at 5-on-5 in the second period and 5 in the third. So only 12 shot attempts during 5-on-5 action in the final two periods for Toronto. Man, it feels like if you replay that game, like I was just saying, the Blackhawks probably win that game, probably maybe 7 of the 10. And it was the first time since February 12th, 2020, where the Blackhawks allowed 25 or fewer shot attempts at 5-on-5. And that February 12th game in 2020, oddly enough, came at a 3-0 loss for the Blackhawks to Vancouver. I think shot attempts were 58 to 25 in that matchup. I also felt the Blackhawks did a pretty decent job of containing Austin Matthews outside of the breakdown in that first period that led to the goal. I remember last game it was against Toronto, but it was in Chicago, the November 24th game, where the Hawks won 4-3 in overtime. The Blackhawks were able to get the last line change in that hockey game, and Jason Dickinson was unbelievable against Austin Matthews. Check this out. When Austin Matthews was on the ice with Jason Dickinson, the Blackhawks led 15-0 in shot attempts, and they also outscored the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-0 in that game. I think put Jason Dickinson on the Selke Trophy map because I remember leaving that game and it was an unbelievable defensive effort by Jason Dickinson on Austin Matthews. And I think that was probably something that Craig Berube was going to try to get away from, or like get the matchup away from Austin Matthews and Jason Dickinson. So, I mean, felt like Jason Dickinson did a pretty good job today, although I don't think he faced Austin Matthews as much in this game, because obviously the Blackhawks did not have the Hawks had to throw out their first line first. Let's see, looking at this in real time. Yeah, so Jason Dickinson was on the ice for 3 minutes and 46 seconds when Austin Matthews was on the ice, and the shots on goal were 3-2 in favor of Chicago. So it was still a quieter effort whenever the Blackhawks did have Jason Dickinson on the ice. It feels like this This game was an Anthony Stolarz game, and that is tonight's Player of the Game, which is sponsored by Burger King. Get your $5 Whopper Jr. today. You rule. Anthony Stolarz was the helped the Florida Panthers win a Stanley Cup last year, and he was legitimately one of the best goaltenders in the NHL last year on a per-start basis. He stopped 20.1 goals saved above expected in just 27 games, and that 20.1 ranked third among all NHL goaltenders for Florida last year. And this year, he's been absolutely terrific for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Him and Joseph Woll have been excellent. The Blackhawks had an expected goals of 3.21, so he basically stopped 2.21 above expected. A terrific goaltending performance by Anthony Stolarz. Arvid Soderblom, I thought he was okay. We talked about how last year Arvid had two of his five wins against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Those two games against Toronto last year were awesome games as well. The November 24th game at the UC, he stopped 34 of 37 shots for a save percentage of .919. And then in the October 16th game in Toronto, he made 35 saves on 36 shots for a save percentage of .972. And that was legitimately one of his best starts of his career, probably the best start of his career, at least to that point of the season. I know earlier this year he had a really good one. I think it was against Anaheim, where he stopped like above four goals above expected, which was an incredible performance. But yeah, missed opportunity for the Blackhawks to kind of get back on track. The power play specifically jumps out to me as an area where the second period where they had consecutive power plays, including a 28-second one of 5-on-3 time. It's like if you score on one of those power plays to even it up at 1-1, it's probably a different feel to the game. But then Toronto ends up scoring the next one to make it 2-0, and the Blackhawks are kind of playing catch up. I know in the second period they definitely tilted the ice in their favor, but then when they score in that third period to make it 2-1, Toronto ended up scoring 21 seconds later, and it kind of felt like the dagger in Chicago's heart because it halted any sort of momentum that the Blackhawks could generate. And then the Taylor Hall slashing penalty with 7:38 left in the game was a tough one. Hawks get a power play, their fourth of the game, with 5:29 left. Unfortunately, they're not able to capitalize on that. I think they had zero shots on goal on that power play. And then eventually Toronto scores the empty netter to seal the deal. So tough loss for the Blackhawks. Again, probably one of their best efforts of the season that came in a loss. And it was really that first period breakdown on the Austin Matthews goal. But even so, I left that first period feeling like it was a decent road period for the Blackhawks. And unfortunately, the score looks kind of more lopsided than this game actually was, for sure. And I think if you're the Blackhawks, you're pleased with the overall effort, but you're probably disappointed with the result in the hockey game. All right, we got some Blackhawks sound rolling in from the locker room in Toronto. We'll take a quick break, then hear what came out of the Blackhawks locker room. You're listening to the Blackhawks postgame show on 720 WGN.
Here now, Timmons from the right point fires a shot. They score! This deflected off the inboards, out in front of the net. And Frazier Minton fires the puck past Arvid Soderblom. It's now 3-1 in favor of Toronto.
Back on the Blackhawks postgame show, that was the kind of the dagger goal of the game. Frazier Minton scoring to make it 3-1 for Toronto. 21 seconds after Lucas Reichel scored to put Chicago on the board. It was Lucas Reichel's third goal of the season. Let's go to Lucas Reichel, who was one of the guys that talked after the game for the Chicago Blackhawks. This audio is courtesy of Ben Pope of the Chicago Sun-Times.
How would you assess that game?
I think second and third period we created chances. It was not like grade A, but we were in the ozone buzzing. We went to the net, and fortunately, we didn't get a good bounce to put it in. But just sometimes we have those passes that didn't go tape to tape, and then we're in the D zone for a little bit, and I don't know. We just gotta find ways to win the game. You know, when we 2-1, or when we're up, or when we're down with one goal, and Yeah, it's pretty tough right now.
These last two games, it seems like you guys have had quite a few chances and maybe just not gotten lucky or not gotten the breaks after all the losses previous this year. Is it kind of just compounding and frustrating even though you know you're playing better?
Yeah, I think if we keep going to the net and go to the net front and create those chances, we're going to score and then we go from there. And
Do you feel like the momentum got taken away when you guys cut it to 2-1 and then gave up the 3-1 goal right after?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe yesterday or the last few games, we score one and then we next year if we get one. So it kills the momentum and, it definitely sucks.
That was Blackhawks forward Lucas Reichel. Man, his line, the fourth line of him, Pat Maroon, and Craig Smith has been oddly good together. And it feels weird where you got two veterans near the end of their careers they're playing on a line with Lucas Reichel. You know, we kind of went into the training or went into the season knowing that Lucas Reichel was not a fourth line player. You didn't really want him there because he's better suited in kind of a top nine, top six role. It's kind of worked for the Blackhawks to have him in that fourth line center spot with Maroon and Smith. And so nice to see him score his second goal in either four or five games and his third of the season. One of the players that assisted on that, Pat Maroon had the primary. TJ Brody recorded the secondary assist in his return to Toronto. Let's hear what he had to say after this loss.
How would you assess that one?
Yeah, you know, it's not the result we wanted. That's how we played a fairly good game. Had some possession time in their end, some chances and looks. That's the way it went.
It seemed like maybe the most offensive zone time you guys have had in a few weeks is just kind of a hot goalie and tough to break through.
Yeah, I think we might have been able to do a better job at getting to him. There's a couple of pucks sitting there and loose. That's the way the game goes sometimes.
Is that one that you feel maybe your group deserved a better fate, TJ?
Yeah, maybe. We were prepared throughout the whole game. Obviously we can't, give him a goal back after we score one. So, that's just a momentum killer and, it changes the whole game.
How do you feel coming back here?
I guess back-to-back, so you're going to, don't really get a chance to, do anything. So, it's just another game.
It seems like the past few weeks, month or so, you've played a lot better than at the beginning of the year. What's kind of gotten on track for you personally?
I think just getting to know the systems, the guys. You don't have to take that second to, look and see where guys are. You sort of have an idea of what, guys, typically do in certain situations and where they're going to be. So, you can make the play a little bit quicker.
That was Blackhawks defenseman TJ Brody back in his old stomping grounds where he played the last couple years with the Maple Leafs. I do feel like Brody has been playing a little bit better for the Blackhawks, and he's kind of needed to, especially with Seth Jones out of the lineup. But he's mostly been playing with some of the younger guys, like Nolan Allen and Louis Crevier. So he's kind of had to be the father type figure on his pairing. But it was a really tough start to the year for him. I think he was the 5-on-5 goal differential with him on the ice through the first month of the season was like -8, and there was no one else even close to that. And so I think that healthy scratch kind of helped him reset a little bit, and he's been less noticeable from a standpoint of just making mistakes. And so you like to see that for the Blackhawks, who have been without their top defenseman for the last few weeks in Seth Jones. They were also out Alec Martinez was out of the lineup for a little bit there for the Blackhawks. So good to see Brody slowly getting his game back on track. And again, another defensive performance by the Blackhawks. I shouldn't say another, but another one of in the grand scheme of this season. I know they're not coming off the greatest defensive performance yesterday versus Columbus, but just overall as a whole, feels like the Hawks, there aren't too many games this year where you look at the stat sheet and you're like, wow, the high danger scoring chances are really lopsided because the Hawks gave up some leaky goals and just had a ton of defensive breakdowns. Feels like they've been way better in that department this season. All right, we got more to get to on the Blackhawks post-game show, including our save of the game. And we'll hear from Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson coming up next right here on 720 WGN.
Left wing side to Grabenkin. He coughed up the puck the other way. Teravainen into the Leaf zone down the right wing. Fed the slot. Donato shoots. Blocker save. Rebound. Donato put it on goal from below the goal line. But it's kept out of there by Stolarz with a scrambling save.
That was tonight's save of the game, which is sponsored by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program. Learn more at ComEd.com/poweringbiz. Two of 27 saves on the night for Anthony Stolarz, who finished with a 964 save percentage. Again, he stopped, what was it, 1 point? Oh, I'm looking at the 5-on-5. He stopped, Oh, I'm looking at the different game. Sorry, I'm looking at the goal saved above expected. It is 2.21 saved above expected. So he was unbelievable for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Arvid Soderblom, his counterpart, stopped 18 of 21 shots for a save percentage of .857. Can't really fault him for any of the goals, but I'm sure a disappointing loss for him. He also had a shot on goal. Credit to John Weidemann for catching this. He registered a shot on goal in the first period. It was in the first minute of the game. It was from 186 feet out. I tried to dig up the video and I looked at it, and it was basically a clearing attempt from behind his own goal. Ended up going off the boards and just kind of rolled to Anthony Stolarz. And got some home cooking in Toronto because they registered that as a shot on goal for Arvid Soderblom. And also going to credit Ben Pope for the second time in this today. He's the first Blackhawks goalie to record a shot on goal since Alex Stalock on December 31st, 2022. And he's just the third Hawks goalie to do so in the last 20 years. Corey Crawford had one. Also the sixth goalie with a shot on goal in the NHL this season. One of them was Philip Gustafson for Minnesota. He scored an empty net goal earlier in the year. So, it was weird looking at the score sheet, the event summary, and you're looking at all the shots, and you're like, what? Soderblom, one shot on goal? So I looked that up, and it was a weird one for him. And speaking of Soderblom, too, just looking at his career stats now, he has only one win in seven starts this season, which is really unfortunate because he's played awesome. Going into this game, he had a .236 save percent or goals against average and a .926 save percentage. Only one win to show for it in seven starts, and now he still only has 8 wins and 57 career NHL appearances with the Blackhawks. I mean, the way he handled last season, I'm sure, was extremely tough, but it feels like, man, he deserves a lot better this season by the Blackhawks, and unfortunately has just one win to show for it. He's now 3 games away from hitting the 60-game mark, which means once he hits the 60-game mark, he's no longer waivers exempt. So if the Blackhawks wanted to send him down to Rockford, he's going to have to go through waivers, and there's just no chance I think the Blackhawks would even risk doing that. But it doesn't feel like that is going to be a huge deal for Chicago, or it might be a big worry for the Blackhawks, because Laurent Brossoit, we found out a few games ago, he's going to be out at least 6 more weeks after undergoing a cleanup procedure on his right knee when he tore his meniscus in August when he underwent the original surgery. And I think that the clarification to that injury was he's going to be reevaluated in 6 weeks. So it's going to be beyond the 6 week mark when Brossoit even returns. So Soderblom is almost for sure going to get the 60 game mark, barring unforeseen circumstances or injuries or whatever, knock on wood. But yeah, so we'll see how the Blackhawks kind of handle that. It's kind of a situation where you're going to punt until January or February, whenever Brossoit is ready to return. But yeah, something to monitor in the coming weeks. It feels like Soderblom for sure is going to hit the 60-game mark for the Blackhawks. All right, let's go to some sound. Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson addressed the media just a little bit ago. Let's hear what he had to say after this loss.
It seemed like you guys had a lot of offensive zone time and just weren't able to break through.
Yeah, we had some great chances. I thought we worked them down low pretty good. That was kind of the game plan, and unfortunately, we just didn't, connect on a few of them. There was a couple of loose pucks in there that we just couldn't get our hands on. I thought they battled pretty hard in front of their net. I liked our guys' intensity and jam, but unfortunately, we got to find ways to score goals if we're not getting them on the power play.
Another time where goal right after scoring kind of undoes the momentum.
Yeah, but that's just the timing. It happens sometimes and sometimes it doesn't. There was a couple tough bounces on us tonight, and but we got to make them bounce our way. We got to work for that.
Look, I wouldn't suggest that there's anything wrong with Connor Bedard, but it looks like things might be getting him down a little bit. Is that fair to say, do you think? Or?
No, I don't think so. I think he's had pretty good games lately.
Yeah.
And I think he's kind of getting himself back on track of where he wants to be. And I think he was frustrated for a little bit. But like I said, he's an upbeat guy, and he kind of lets things slide off of him. And he doesn't let anything show that it's bothering him, and he gets right back to work. And I think that's a good sign of maturity and professionalism.
What do you see putting Bertuzzi with him tonight?
Yeah, no, I thought Bert was good tonight. Unfortunately, Connor just hit him on the power play right in the leg, but that's what he's good at. He's good at being in front of the net, and a lot of times those go in. He does a good job screening, or he gets a good chance on the rebound. But it didn't work offensively tonight, but I thought it was I thought they had some good shifts in the ozone. I thought, Taylor gives them a little speed and strong on the puck. And, Bert's usually around that net, and Connor's a playmaker. So it's a makeup of a good line. It just didn't connect tonight.
The power play seemed like it kind of took a step back a little bit.
Yeah, I thought we had trouble in our entries. We're just looking for that perfect play instead of having a little more speed and trying to get it either low to high on the strong side, bumping it back to the D, or getting it to the other side. I just thought we were a little off keel. And, the one, we kind of had a 5-on-3 in the middle. We had a great look early with Foligno in the middle. Nice pass from Connor, and it just, it just didn't connect on the goal. And after that, it was kind of a mismatch, halfway through a change on the second half of the power play. We just got to be better. We got to make sure we're better on that. We're not going to score 3 goals every game like last game, but we got to make sure we get in there, get some zone time like we did 5-on-5.
Is Soderblom okay? It seemed like he was in pain.
I think it was just an awkward shot, high shot. I think one was on Stolarz at the other end, and then one finished off on Sodi. So, guys just trying desperately to shoot pucks at the end of the game to get a goal. But, I think he was okay. I haven't got anything else.
That was Blackhawks head coach Luke Richardson talking about the loss. Yeah, I think the 0-for-4 night on the power play, little bit of a step back after the previous 3 games when the Blackhawks had 5 power play goals combined, including 3 in the Columbus game yesterday. Entries were obviously a big kind of sticking point that Luke was saying. I also just thought it was a total missed opportunity in the second period for Chicago when they had consecutive power plays, including 28 seconds of 5-on-3 time. It's like you score there, you tie that game up at 1-1, and maybe it's a different feeling. Then later on, Toronto makes it 2-0, and it just feels like a multi-goal swing. So an unfortunate time for the Blackhawks to not perform on the power play, given how well they played defensively in this game. I want to go to Twitter or X really quick and answer a question from Jason. Call up Nazar to center the second line. Put Kurashev back on the wing where he belongs. I understand Nazar needs to work on his defensive play. I just don't care. He wasn't drafted to win a Selke. This team needs offense. It needs someone else to play center. And I understand the sentiment that comes with that. Nazar has been lighting it up in Rockford, to be honest. He's tied for seventh in the league with 10 goals, and he's tied for eighth in the league with 21 points. And so he's been really good for the Rockford IceHogs. My only worry is if you call him up now, he's getting so many puck touches playing on the first power play in Rockford. It just doesn't feel like he's going to get as many puck touches in the NHL, not because of lack of opportunity, but because you don't want Nazar to get called up and then he's kind of viewed as the savior to the offensive woes, specifically at even strength for the Blackhawks. You want to make sure that when Nazar gets called up, there is zero chance he's going back to Rockford. Like, you have to be 100% confident that when he is with Chicago and he's up in the NHL for good, like, he's there for good and he's not going to see Rockford again. My sentiment has always been, let him stay here, or let him stay in Rockford through the first half of the season, and then in the second half, post-holiday, I mean, you can maybe sell me on January, but I would probably do it closer to February, where he's so used to playing 40-ish games in college. At Michigan, he played 41 last year, and so you don't want him to hit that wall around the 40 game mark, and then he's psychologically thinking, oh boy, we're just halfway through this professional season. And so you want him to kind of work through that wall in Rockford. And I understand there are some pros to getting him to the NHL and working him through that at the NHL level to see the physical and mental grind. But I just feel like you can do more harm than good, especially given the track record by the Blackhawks of late and how the previous regime handled some of the prospects with Kirby Dach and Adam Boqvist. And even, you know, you can throw Kevin Korchinski in there. Just last season was really hard for him, and he was ineligible to play in the AHL. So you don't want to get a situation where you call somebody up and then you got to send him back down. You saw it with Lucas Reichel, how he was bouncing up between Rockford and the NHL probably far too frequently. And so you kind of want Frank Nazar to make sure that he's 100% blowing the doors off of Rockford for the entire first half of the season. And if he goes through a little bit of a cold stretch, you want to see him kind of power through that. And once he does power through that, I think that the Hawks would feel really good about calling him up, knowing that he would be with the Blackhawks for good. So preaching patience, at least through the holidays, in my opinion. And that's where I stand, despite, you know, Frank Nazar putting up some really solid numbers. And by the way, with those numbers, the 10 goals and 21 points, he leads all rookies in the minor league. So that's a nice trend for Frank Nazar. All right, we got one more break to get to, and then we're going to wrap up the Blackhawks postgame show after this on 720 WGN.
It'll come free. Diving effort by McAvoy. Can't swat it out of the zone. Now it comes back in his direction, and he's got a breakaway. McAvoy clear in from the red line. Goes to the backhand and scores! Charlie McAvoy with his second of the game. It's a shorthanded goal, and the Bruins lead it 4-0.
That was Ryan Johnston of 98.5, the Sports Hub from Bruins Radio. And that takes us to our next game preview, which is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Boston Bruins are in town. Another Original Six matchup, going to be at the United Center on Wednesday at 6:30. By the way, the last two games, so today was a 6:30 puck drop, Central Time. Yesterday was an afternoon puck drop. The next six straight games after this, too, are either 6:30 puck drops or earlier. Got 6:30, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 6:30, 12 o'clock, and 2 o'clock. Man, that is a nice stretch. That's eight straight games of 6:30 puck drops or earlier, which I really like, because we had a really tough stretch there in the first month and a half of the season where we got those late 9 o'clock, 9:30 starts on the West Coast. All right, I digress. Boston Bruins, next on the schedule. They, of course, made headlines a couple weeks ago when they fired Jim Montgomery November 19th after an 8-9-3 start. Montgomery was the Jack Adams Award winner for Boston just a couple years ago when they had that historic regular season for the Bruins. And check this out. I mean, in 184 games, they were an 120-41-23 under Jim Montgomery. It's one of the best coaching win percentages in NHL history, and yet they fired him after 2.5 seasons, mainly because they were 9-11 in the postseason, and so they didn't make any deep run, and so Boston ended up changing up their coaching staff, hiring interim coach Joe Sacco, who was an assistant on Jim Montgomery's staff, and they are 4-2-0 in the six games under Joe Sacco. The big thing for me is the biggest difference. They have tightened things up defensively, but man, they are finally getting some goaltending from Jeremy Swayman. 1.7 goals against average, .929 save percentage in his last four starts. His season totals are 6-9-2 with a .309 goals against average .892 save percentage in 17 games. So they clearly, it's like the old adage, like, show me a good coach and I'll show you a good goaltender. You know, the Boston Bruins were not getting good goaltending from Jeremy Swayman, who held out all of training camp because of the contract, and that did not do him or the team any favors. He signed that 8-year, $66 million contract, $8.25 million AAV. It seems like he's finally getting back on track, or at least slowly is. And then David Pastrnak, he snapped a 7-game goal drought on Sunday with in a 6-3 win over Montreal. That was his second 7-game goal drought of the season. He has only 8 goals this season, 3 of them at 5-on-5. Last year, he had 27 goals at 5-on-5. So he's also one of the reasons why Boston has gotten a little bit of a slow start. And so beware if you're the Blackhawks, Pastrnak and Swayman potentially hitting their stride as they come to the United Center on Wednesday. Blackhawks hockey is sponsored by Plumbers 901 Chicago, where they do it right the first time. Your Chicago and Northwest Indiana Hyundai dealers, Circa Sports Illinois, United Airlines, and Citgo. When you start with Citgo, you're good to go. Big thanks to the help we had on the broadcast tonight, our production crew of Jack Heinrich and Alan Poppy. They were led by our engineer, the Colonel Brett Jackson. For John Weideman and Troy Murray, who brought you the call from Toronto, I'm Charlie Meliotis, signing off after a 4-3 Blackhawks loss to the Maple Leafs. Thanks for being with us, and we'll talk to you on Wednesday from the UC.